You can now take KRBN Internet News Talk Radio with you on your mobile phone, as we are making it easier to listen to the great hosts here on KRBN, including our very own West Lane County Commissioner, Jay Bozovich. It's free and available on Google Play. Just look for player.fm. That's player.fm and search for KRBN.
Live from Lane County, Oregon, it's the Boz Knows Show with your host, West Lane County Commissioner, Jay Bozovich. And now, here's Jay.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of the Boz Knows Show. And I'm your host, West Lane County Commissioner Jay Bozovich. And we're coming to you live from beautiful downtown Elmira, Oregon, where the smoke has actually lifted a little bit. And we're seeing some, if you go to the purple air site, we're actually seeing a air quality index of 59. We got below 100 out here. I'm just amazed. Of course, that's way out here on the western edge of the valley where we're just getting some of that coastal air blowing in. Looking into Eugene and all that, they're still in the 100s and the 200s, but they're not in the 300s anymore or the 500s. So they're probably going, wow, look, the air is getting clearer. Oh my gosh, it has been a long, long 8 days of this. My poor poodles don't get it. You know, it's like, dad, we want to go outside. Dad, we want to play ball. Dad, why can't we go outside? We've got so much energy because, you know, they're so used to being able to run and get exercise. And, you know, when the air quality is at 500, you don't even want your dogs breathing that for any length of time. It's like, go do your business, come back in here so I can close the door and keep the smoke out. Yeah, it has been really bad here in Western Oregon, and some places it hasn't broken at all yet. And who knows, this could just be a little bit of a temporary respite as the afternoon winds pick up. Tonight, when it starts, you know, getting still again and we get that down valley flow back out of the fires, we could be back up in the 500s again rather quickly. But we have all sorts of things happening here. It's such a changing set of conditions. You know, it's creating all sorts of impacts for folks that were evacuated, folks that have lost their homes, and people outside of the area with the smoke, and even beyond that, the impacts of these fires is going to be felt for a long time, and it's not going to be something that is over anytime soon. As the incident commander described the other day, most of these things seem like they're going to be a sprint, and you have to realize that you're actually running a marathon with some of these fires. And they said, this one, it's like we came in thinking we're going to be running a marathon. Now we're running an ultra marathon. Some of the impacts of this are going to be long lasting, and we're going to get very impatient about things. When does Highway 126 reopen? It could be quite a long time, and we'll talk about that some more later in the show. The people that are, you know, that have had their home or their barns or whatever buildings lost to the fire, it's going to be a long process to get through them, get them, you know, first you got to get access, which means the roads got to be open and getting contractors everyone else is going to be trying to get. It's going to be a while, and then, you know, the force there is going to take a long time to recover. Yeah, the McKenzie Valley won't look like we refire probably for close to a generation, as much of it as burned. Some of the video I've seen of some of the burn area. Just want to, you know, not be a Debbie Downer so much, but I want to have people have realistic expectations about recovery. This is going to be a very long and drawn out process. And what I'm a little bit concerned about is everybody's got a lot of energy right now. Like when we opened the donation center and we were immediately overwhelmed with goods that people brought to us to the point where we couldn't even get them cataloged as to what we had. And we had to tell people to stop bringing us stuff. That sort of energy kind of spikes right at the beginning of a crisis. And the problem is we're going to need some of that energy later on to finish that ultra marathon. So kind of pace yourselves, folks. It's a long, long race where we started last year. Things have changed a lot. A few things, last show we did, I think we were at like about 105,000 acres burned. Now we're at 167,000 acres burned. So, the fires, got about 50% bigger. Very slowly, though, because that 105,000 acres happened in like 2.5 days. And now over the last 8 days or six, maybe, seven, we've only seen another 60,000 acres burned. That's at least some good news. And all this smoke we have to deal with actually helped the firefighters, because that same thing that caused the inversion and the super fog, which at times has been zero visibility, that has actually put a cap on the fire in a lot of ways. So it couldn't get up and run. And it really, the firefighters, and we finally are up to over 700 firefighters and closing in on 800 that are working this fire. But that's a fire of 160,000 acres with 100 and some firefighters. We had over 600 fires on a 300-acre fire just a few weeks back. Sweet Creek fire. To give you an idea of the level of lack of resources to fight this fire, because all the other fires across the Western United States. So we are so fortunate we actually had that inversion come in and sit on us for a while, because it allowed that really slim firefighting force to actually get a handle on this, particularly in structural protection along the McKenzie Highway. They've been able to really make some good progress there, to the point where we actually today lifted some more level threes, dropped them down to level twos, where folks, the entire Mohawk area has now gone to at least a level two, and we can get back to their homes there. And even the McKenzie Highway area up to Olden Lane at the end of Deerhorn there, and the Deerhorn had changed over to a level two. So that's really great progress that the firefighters have made in kind of putting a stop to that portion of the fire. But the fire at 167,000 acres, the perimeter of that fire is, to think about this a little bit, is 260 miles. So they're out there with bulldozers in forest and rough terrain, and also handline crews trying to build fire lines basically from Medford, Oregon to Portland. Is the distance they're doing that. So you're out there with bulldozers and hand crews trying to cut line that distance to surround this fire. That's why it's only 8% contained at this time. We've been really fortunate with the weather. I hope we stay fortunate. One of the things that worries me a little bit about the fact that I've got better air quality here in Elmira is that could be lifting the cap and increasing fire behavior this afternoon. And I'll probably find out at the morning, whether that happened or not. One of the things that has happened is my schedule's been totally thrown into chaos somewhat, as I'm sitting on board chair and being the board's liaison to the various operations centers, which we have two running here in Lane County. Some people might not understand that there's the fire itself has an incident command system in their own emergency operations center, which is currently headquartered out of Thurston Middle School. That is basically the team that's fighting the fire, and everything inside those fire boundaries and out fighting those fires and decisions around evacuations, et cetera, happened in that incident command center. The county stood up an incident command center because we're dealing not only with having to support that one, which is one of our primary goals of our incident command center, but we're also dealing with the after effects and everything that's happening outside of the fire boundaries to some degrees. And we're the ones that are, you know, having to try and coordinate where do the evacuees go. We're trying to coordinate getting resources in for this as far as road clearing resources, controlling the roads, getting the word out, our public information folks, and trying to get that taken care of. And in fact, one of our things our emergency operations center was able to set up today was a multi-agency resource center that were directly displaced by this fire, that are still in that level 3 zone, and particularly those folks that lost their homes. And we even have some of that information as our survey crews are working through and identified over 300 structures as total losses. We've got the ability to check to see if your specific home is one of those structures or not, or hasn't been surveyed yet. You can get that information over the phone, and you can also get that from the center, which is out at the fairgrounds, the Lane Event Center, in the main convention building on the north end of that building, which is the end closer to 13th. They have that set up, and it's really only for those people. If you're not somebody that has property and lived or had a business inside the fire area, please don't show up there looking for other sorts of assistance. There are other places to go. We do have the Masonic Lodge there on Martin Luther King Boulevard, where they've got the donation center, and some of the volunteer groups are all there some of the other services. This multi-agency resource center is really meant to help people figure out all the moving parts of, how do you make sure you're eligible for reimbursements? How do you, deal with insurance? There's some folks there from our building and planning department that talk about what it's going to, questions people might have about what the permitting is going to be like when they're trying to rebuild. We have mental health professionals there, so help people deal with the grief, the stress of finding out, that your home might not be there any longer. Of course, we've got all the, a lot of other agencies there helping out and providing information. Again, at the Lane County Fairgrounds, it's open today from 12 to 7, tomorrow from 12 to 7, and Friday from 12 to 7. And then we're probably going to open it up every Friday now for the foreseeable future. And hopefully we'll be able to get it to be a little bit more mobile and maybe move it upriver closer to Eugene, so they don't have to come all the way down into Eugene. 12 to 7, then today, tomorrow, and Friday. One of those people that was inside the fire area and was under a level 3, this is a place you can go, a one-stop shop to try and get all your questions answered. We hear from multiple agencies. There's folks that are insurance specialists that can talk about how to deal with your insurance.
homeowners, folks, or whatever, rental insurance, this kind of your place to start getting questions answered. Please, you know, this isn't a place to go and drop off donations. It's not that place. That's over on Martin Luther King Boulevard there across from Autzen Stadium. I would call ahead to make sure we need whatever it is you want to donate, because we are really being overwhelmed by some particular items. So along with that, you know, I want to try and one of the dangers about these sort of emergencies, you know, I talked a little bit about the immediate energy people have and the fact that they're not ready for the long haul, and the danger of that burst of volunteers that is disorganized and not sometimes always providing the right kind of help. Sometimes it's better to slow down and plug in, you know, in a more organized manner so we get the right kinds of help. Another issue with this is misinformation that gets out there, and rumors. And I want to deal with one right away. It got out there and was untrue at first, became true for a little while, and is probably untrue again, which was that the Red Cross had run out of the ability to house people. And it wasn't so much they had run out of the ability to house people, just had more people ask for hotel rooms than they had contracts with hotels to get those rooms in, and weren't getting open fast enough. Now have 890 people housed in 12 hotels across Lane County, in the Springfield area, and they are continuing to get people housed in those hotels. There were about 90 people on a waiting list yesterday. That was the first time they really backed up to have a waiting list. Before then, they had been able to get people into hotel rooms. Part of the problem was, I think some people didn't know how to ask the Red Cross for help. Simple thing is 1-800-RED-CROSS. If you can't remember anything else, 1-800-RED-CROSS. And that will get you connected with somebody that can get you the right local numbers to call and all that stuff if you need shelter or some other help dealing with fire. What the Red Cross had the ability to do is, if they did start getting backed up on getting people into hotels, they could open a congregate shelter somewhere. Of course, they can't have the same capacity because of COVID-19. But they did that this morning at 8 o'clock. They opened a shelter at Churchill High School. So now, one of the things, if you're seeking shelter, you can go to Churchill High School and, you know, temporarily shelter there while they're trying to sort out a hotel room for you. Was the objective is to try and get people into hotels because of COVID-19. So, you know, dispersed housing for these folks. And that's one of the things I do want to talk about later in the program is COVID-19 still around. And we're actually experiencing a little bit of a spike here in Lane County, not due to the fires, due to something that was going on before the fire started. I'm going to pause for a minute here. I want to remind folks, this is a call-in show, and if there's something you have a question about with this fire, I'll try and answer it. If not, I'll try and get you connected with a phone number that can answer it, or take your information down, and I'll get back to you later. But the call-in number is 646-721-9887, and you just have to press 1 to get in on the show. Again, that's 646-721-9887. Just press 1, and that lets Robin, my call screener and producer extraordinaire, know you want to get in on the conversation, because some people call in just to listen on their cell phones as they're driving around, and particularly as folks don't have their normal internet and computer hookups, cell phones are becoming really critical for some folks. So again, 646-721-9887 is the call-in number. So please, you know, be careful of some of these misinformation. Verify before you pass on. You know, there is apparently somebody that was you know, really soliciting for people to open up their homes because they said people were sleeping in their cars because Red Cross had run out of space. And at the time that rumor started going around, it wasn't true. And even at the point where they had a waiting list for hotel rooms, they opened up the Churchill facility to try and get people a temporary place while they were looking for additional hotel space. And one of the things that also has kind of gotten out there is that Red Cross issues vouchers for the hotel rooms. That's not exactly how it works. What you have to do is contact the Red Cross. The Red Cross has to contact the hotel that they have contracts with, kind of make the room reservations for you before you show up so that, that's how you it's getting paid for. If you go to the hotel first and check in, you're going to get charged like a commercial customer and not necessarily get it reimbursed. So that's call the Red Cross first. 1-800 Red Cross. Or go to Churchill High School if you're still needing shelter. Another thing that was starting to go around, though, was as part of this rumor about the Red Cross, a GoFundMe site had been put there that was suspicious at best, as well. So I would be careful about various fundraising efforts that are around this particular crisis. I can tell you there are two very easy, trusted sources if you want to make cash contributions. Of course, the American Red Cross is pretty easy, but that does kind of go into the giant national pot, and you might end up being helping people that from Hurricane Sally instead of from the Holiday Farm fire. But the easiest way to make sure your donation stays local is to contribute to the United Way of Lane County. They have set up a separate, contribution where you can go there, United Way of Lane County, and they have a McKenzie Fire, I believe, or Holiday Farm Fire place where you can make donations. They are collecting those donations. They are taking applications from nonprofits to provide services and aid to folks affected by the fire. The contracts with local nonprofits, so it's like everything about your money stays local with United Way. The staff is local, folks they're going in contract with to provide the relief services that you're paying for are local, and they're going to help local people. So United Way of Lane County, simple, best, easiest way to avoid being scammed. Because I can tell you, scammers prey on areas that are under emergencies. How do I know? Somebody has been spoofing my email account at the county and sending out emails that look like they're from me, except for if you click on the email address, it was a bunch of letters and numbers at gmail.com that had nothing to do with me. But it was one of those, I'm in a meeting. Can you help me? Can you help me out and do something for me real quick? And people reply, sure, I'll help you out. They're actually emails from me going to county department heads, other board members, and community leaders. So, they're pretty sophisticated about how they do this because they figured that people would know a commissioner. And people that replied sent me the reply they got back, which was asking them to go online and buy five $100 eBay gift cards or something like that. It's like, okay. Jay Bozeman was be asking that. And what cracks me up about the whole email is it was signed best regards, Jay Bozovich. And it's like, I never use that. Best regards. So anyone that knew me would probably go, I've never heard Jay say it. I always sign sincerely. If I even put sincerely there, half time it's Jay. Writing a fast note. So please be careful. The scammers target areas in crisis because they realize people let their guard down. They get in a hurry. They're distracted. Watch out for phishing emails right now. Watch out for scam charities. All of that stuff is going to be in areas because they understand this is one of the ways that they're evil. They want to get people when they don't, when they're not being careful. You know, whether they're going to load malware and take your computer over for ransom, or they're going, you know, get your private account information, or they're going to get you to buy something for supposed charity, and it's really not going anywhere near a charity, just into their pockets. We are being targeted right now. Because when I reported those emails being reported back to me to our IT team, they are reporting multiple attacks against the Lane County government website, and also our email of phishing attacks, et cetera, and they're being reported in the area in general. So be aware, the scammers take advantage of crisis. So that's my public service announcement for the moment, for the day. I have one other, though. Fly drones anywhere near the fire. It amazes me that I'm having to say this again, but in the meeting this morning at the incident command post there, they had to state that again, that they have been seeing private drones over the fire areas. That keeps them from flying. You can actually, you know, be responsible for somebody's injury or death because they couldn't get a helicopter in there because some idiot had a drone up in the air, or they couldn't fly drones to do the visual work ahead of a crew or something like that, or the IR camera work that they do with their drones because some idiot has a drone up in the air. Fly drones anywhere near the fire. I don't even care if you are somebody that was allowed to get to your property and you were flying a drone to survey your property. No. No drones anywhere in that airspace. I don't know why we even have to say that over and over and over again at any of these fires. You know, it's almost as bad as the folks that stop and look at a car accident, you know, on the highway, and they're the ones causing the big backup and ultimately 10 more accidents, you know, in the backup. That's just like the looky-loos, the people that fly drones. Stop it. Another public service announcement on the Bose Nose Show from your host, West Lane County Commissioner Jay Bozovich. So, along with not flying drones, I just want to remind people, this emergency is on top of an emergency we had already declared. We are still in a pandemic. And yes, things were getting better, but unfortunately, and they were getting a lot better here in Lane County, but unfortunately, we finally had the worst case scenario. We had a workplace outbreak at a workplace with a vulnerable population, where we had a memory care facility that had a workplace outbreak, and patients and workers are there. And then that's, you know, of course, spread to family and other places. And then we had another workplace outbreak at a bank. And we've had a few spots here and there where we're actually going the wrong direction with our number of COVID cases. And we're also going the wrong direction with the number of hospitalizations and deaths. And, you know, it's easy when, you know, everybody's doing some of this volunteer work and they're trying to help people out and all that stuff to get a little bit lazy about your COVID precautions. We still need, you know, of course, the smoke made it pretty easy to not have to remind people about mask wearing. And now the smoke's starting to lift. Still got to wear those masks. We still have to try and keep our 6 feet of distance. If we can't keep that 6 feet of distance, you've got to wash your hands, don't touch your face, all that good stuff. Try and avoid gatherings. Don't need to be dealing with a spike in COVID at the same time as we're dealing with 167,000 acre fire in our county. You know, our emergency operations staff, the folks that have been staffing that pandemic emergency operations center, which is a separate emergency operations center from one that's supporting the fire. So we now have the one that's, you know, that the fire folks are running and two that the county are running right now. You know, our staff is really pushed to the limits. Folks that are trained to operate those, you know, in the incident command system and all that stuff are getting sparse between the two incident commands that are set up right now. And on top of that, we still have all the work we normally do in the county. You know, there's a rather large election coming up that we have to run here in Lane County. And, you know, it's getting to be tax bill time for our assessment and taxation folks. You know, trying to get people loaned out of there. It doesn't change the fact that we've got a jail to run. It doesn't change the fact that we still have roads to maintain. All that still goes on. We still have all our health clinics that we're running. You know, we're still doing all those other jobs. So, we need to have a little bit of patience about, you know, how much services we can offer sometimes out there. But we also have to think about not adding to the workload. So little things like, you know, taking the proper COVID precaution, being a safe driver. We're already having problems with folks running the roadblocks at the fire. You know, they throw some kind of fake, you know, computer printout that says medical staff up on their dashboard and then run slow past the roadblock thinking that's going to get them in. And it's a good way to get arrested. It's also a good way to cause an accident or injury. But we have to. The roads up there are so dangerous. You can't stress how dangerous they are. So if you are allowed in, please, please, the speed limits up there are considered to be 20 miles an hour. Stuff is coming down constantly. We had a near miss the other day where somebody parked, you know, one of the I believe it was one of the animal support teams, somebody had parked on Highway 126, and people said, you probably should move that. It's not a really good area to be parked. Got in, moved his car, and as soon as he moved his car, a huge Doug fir fell across the road right where the car had been. So it is not safe up there yet. Trees are still falling into the roadway. Boulders are rolling down hills into the roadway. Visibility stinks, and we need to be getting, you know, tree felling crews up there. We need to be getting utility company crews up there. We need to have the fire crews working up there. We don't need you up there unless you have special permission to be up there. And if you are going up there, please, please be safe up there. And don't add to the workload. But not only that, think about that outside of the fire area. Pay attention to your driving. We don't need a major motor vehicle accident with injuries, you know, somewhere out near Deadwood when, so much of our resources is on the other side of Springfield right now. So you can help. Be safe. Be cautious. Stay well. Do what you can to not add to that problem. Because that's going to be so important for us to try and get past this. And then we'll get into that long haul. And I want to kind of make aware, we still have Sweet Creek Road closed because of the Sweet Creek fire that started 8 days before this fire. So, and this fire has been going for 8 days. So that's over 2 weeks. That road's been closed and folks are having to detour an hour and a half on one lane forest roads to get to Florence, let alone just, you know, if they have to go to Eugene, that's an hour and a half to get to Florence, and then they still got to drive from Florence to Eugene, the live out Sweet Creek Road. They're fortunate they do have a bypass, so they have a way to get out. Highway 126, that's only like a 2 mile section of Sweet Creek Road that's causing that, because there's such steep terrain and the fire that burned above it, and the hazard trees and boulders are still falling down in the roadway. There's basically over 20 miles of that along Highway 126 that's that heavily damaged, like that 2 miles of Sweet Creek. That's going to take a long time to stabilize and safe again. We are going to need people to be patient and understand that it's going to be extremely limited access into that area for quite a long time. You're not going to be able to drive 126 to Bend anytime in the next several months. And it may take even longer than that, because when the rains come, there's going to be a whole nother set of problems out there. Right now, we're just dealing with boulders that are rolling down the hill because the root system that held them in place is now ash. And dealing with trees that are falling over because they're kind of, you know, weakened and fought, you know, their roots have weakened. We're having to go out there and basically clear hazard trees 200 feet up slope of these highways and all that, as well as worry about rolling logs and everything else. It's a very, very dangerous highway. And it's not safe to allow people up there that don't have an urgent need to be there in some way. And particularly without escort, particularly without being checked in and out, so we know you're safely back out again. Be patient. This is going to take quite a while, and it's going to be, you know, sometime in late fall before they actually declare this an under control fire, you know, 100% contained. I think the projections are late October right now. So. Patience. You know, this is a ultra marathon, and it's going to take a long time. Things like, CenturyLink's DSL service is going to take months to stand back up in some of those areas. Power poles that they had their fiber hung on that are gone now that need to be replaced. It's going to take time, and it's going to take a lot of effort and a lot of patience. You know, this isn't a snowstorm where the snow melts and we get better after a while. And maybe we just have to pull a bunch of trees and branches out of the roadway, which took time. Think about how long it took us to recover from Snowmageddon and how long just to get Highway 58 reopened. This is worse because the trees will continue to fall down. There'll be landslide issues with the rains. And, we've got 9 bridges that were in heavily amounts of fire that we have to go out and check to make sure the bridges didn't become unsound. In the heat, that inspection and certification process will take time. And if those bridges have to be repaired, that will take time. So at least be patient about Highway 126. This is going to take a lot of time to get all the way back to some semblance of normal. And even then, it's going to be quite a while. And, you know, this is going to have long-term impact. It's going to have years worth of impact to the water quality for their system that serves almost 200,000 people. They're going to have to do additional treatment work that they normally don't do, which is going to cost them more money you know, to treat, which means that's going to have an impact on their cash flow. You can imagine what their system costs are just on the electrical damage they had. Of course, they're probably not generating much electricity out of their multi-lever generation system, so there's a reduction in revenue there. So water and electric folks, you may see an impact in your bill for years to come. Many of, you know, most of those people don't, you know, yes, they're customers of EWEB in the fire area, but 95% of their customers don't live in that area. They live in the Eugene area. But you're going to be paying for these fire impacts in your utility bills. Now, this is, you know, I got a notice today from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife because I've got a fishing license and I'm on their email system, basically saying they've set a web page to talk about the impacts of the fires on various different activities. They suspended almost all hunting and access to the woods across Oregon, basically, because they didn't want to have the chance of any additional fires started by a hunter. That has a big impact. You know, think about, you know, all the various businesses that sell hunting supplies, and think about the families that depend, you know, putting up some venison and elk every year in their freezer for food for most of the rest of the year. Some of the folks that maybe aren't quite so well. This is having an impact well beyond the McKenzie River area. And it's going to have impacts for years. I can imagine that used to be one of the biggest draws in the world, fly fishing, which is, you know, going up, you know, to float the McKenzie. It's not going to be as beautiful and scenic, and I can't imagine the fishery is going to be recovering very quickly for several years. And that's a large driver of tourism in Lane County, is that McKenzie River corridor. And the fishing, the hiking, the drive, it's not going to look the same for quite a while. So, you know, we'll see impacts in the tourism industry. We're going to see impacts, you know, all throughout Lane County. In fact, you know, I was contacted this week by Siuslaw National Forest, and you're kind of like, well, what's that got to do with the McKenzie River fire? The Siuslaw National Forest is on the coast, right? Well, they shut down all their campgrounds and even the dunes during this emergency for the same reason everyone else did, which was get everybody out of the woods now because we just can't handle anything more. And we don't have the ability to. And what they were contacting me about is they're now starting to think about how do they reopen. And they're asking local jurisdictions what our capacity was to deal with. They started reopening facilities in our jurisdiction, particularly with Lane County, the Oregon Dunes National Recreation Area, is one of the first things they want to open. Well, the deputy that we contract to have patrol the dunes that they pay for has been temporarily reassigned to the fire because we're that short on staff. And that's really one of the things that happens during these sort of emergencies is you grab people from everywhere and anywhere. And it turns out that that particular deputy, before he became a law enforcement, was in fire, you know, suppression side of the thing. So he had some fire background that was really a critical skill to where he has been assigned some liaison work with the search and rescue folks that are doing the assessments of structures and the search for missing people because of his understanding knowledge and safety knowledge about being around structures that have had fire. So he's a really critical piece to stay up there on the fire. But that portion of the work will be done by next week. So one of the things we communicated back and forth with the CyberSlow folks is, and it turns out they weren't looking to reopen this weekend. They were talking about next week, that by next week we should be able to reassign him back to the dunes. But there were some other services that they were contracted for, some enhanced patrols of their campgrounds and all. We won't be able to probably service for several weeks yet because we still have so many of those deputies lined patrolling the areas that have been evacuated to prevent the looters from getting up there and causing problems. That's how far reaching some of these impacts are, that this fire actually shut down the dunes and has shut down campgrounds over on the coast. And, you know, even now the coast is looking at rain tomorrow. Their air quality is pretty darn good. But our ability to provide law enforcement on the coast right now is really limited because so much of our law enforcement is upriver. So the impacts are far and wide, and they're going to be very long-term. Some of them will return pretty quickly. I think as the fire gets under control and we get less evacuations, we'll see less need for law enforcement. So just be able to shift back towards the coast, so that all will reopen. Things will get back to normal somewhat around Florence. But there'll still be impacts. I mean, you know, how many people now, having watched national news for the last week about Oregon's on fire, are taking trips to Oregon? It's going to have an impact on our tourism industry. No different than some of the previous forest fires have, you know, down in the Josephine County area when they had those fires down there that caused a horrible smoke in the Rogue River Valley. That hurt tourism for almost a year down there. We're going to see those kind of lingering impacts. Why I started pushing for with my board, I brought this up in yesterday's board meeting, and I'm going to continue to push this. We have got to be thinking now about how we're going to help those folks that lost their homes, their barns, and whatever structures up there get expedited permits to rebuild, and possibly having some way of subsidizing all the permit fees and all that, so they're not having to pay, you know, on top of having lost their homes, pay a whole bunch of fees to get the approvals to rebuild. And so I'm trying to find funding sources to offset our permit fees. I'm talking to staff now about what sort of things might have to be waived, because a lot of those homes upriver were older homes, and they were built before Senate Bill 100 passed in Oregon and we had statewide land use planning. So that trying to build what was there, you know, built 70 or 80 years ago, it's necessarily legal under today's rules. And where do we need to have those rules waived so people can rebuild? Because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, unless there's a true life safety reason, if you had a house or business upriver and it got burnt in this fire, you should have the right to rebuild in that same spot. And there has to be a really good reason why not. But the way our land use permitting system set up, it's more that you've got to prove to permit people that you've got that right. And it's not so much, you know, you have to get them to say yes, instead of we should be saying yes almost no matter what, unless we can, you know, some, you know, extraordinary reason to say no. Like your existing home was in a hazard zone anyway, and was precarious or something, you know, that, or not, you know, safe in the first place. You know, there's there has to be some super extraordinary reason why you should not be able to rebuild, particularly if you're rebuilding, you know, under current building codes that are safe and a good way to rebuild. You know, I'm not saying people are going to necessarily be able to rebuild with 2x4 construction because it doesn't have the code is going to be 2x6 construction on the exterior walls. So that sort of thing is probably not going to get waived. But some of the things like non-conforming use and some of our other things that come in with Senate Bill 100, we need to look at how we can get to yes for people and get to yes quickly and get people, you know, start, you know, try and shorten the ultra marathon a little bit and not, you know, start putting up a, you know, we don't want it to be an ultra marathon through a obstacle course of bureaucracy and permitting. We want to start taking those obstacles out as quickly as possible. And I am committed to working with whoever I can, getting legislation passed if I have to make sure that the folks from all these fires in Oregon aren't caught, you know, particularly if they had an older home, aren't caught with the rules have changed. You can't build that house where it was any longer. In fact, you can't even build on your property. That's what I'm afraid will happen with some of these people. And I am committed to trying to make sure that does not happen. And I'm committed to do it here in Lane County, and I'm pretty sure that there'll be a strong commitment in any of the fire areas from this summer, and we'll see a strong push multiple counties to do the same thing, which should put a lot of pressure on the legislature to have it. So we have about 6 or 7 minutes left in the show. I'm going to pause for a moment, remind folks, this is a call-in. If you have questions, comments, something you want to bring up, change the subject away from the fires, 646-721-9887 is the number to get into the Bo's Nose Show. Just press 1 so we know you want to get on the show. Again, 646-721-9887. Just press 1. And that lets Robin, my crawl screener producer extraordinaire, know you want to get in on the show. And I know, Robin, I didn't prime you with this. You have two friends that have confirmed they lost their homes upriver, and one of them actually privately lets you see some photos and all that of their property. Do you want to, you know, maybe just talk a little bit about, you know, what those folks are going through, kind of emotionally, and you know, just so people can kind of understand that this is so tough for those folks, you know, and it doesn't help them if we're arguing about things like arson, not arson, global warming or forest management. They don't care. They just lost their home. So any words for the wise here, Robin?
Well, all I can say is that, of course, they're devastated. And just even knowing people that this has happened to, you know, because normally you hear this on the news, oh, it's happened in California, a million anchors were lost, and, you know, 100 people lost their homes and lives, whatever. It doesn't affect you until it's either you or you know somebody personally that you care and love that it happens to. It's just, there's almost no words for it. But one of my friends, you know, she's fortunate that the fire service rescued her horses, which is great. They were barely burnt, which is a good thing. Her mobile is still kind of intact. She hadn't had a chance to go inside yet, and one of the other structures, but everything else is flattened, and she's just doing her best to hold it together. You know, it's hopefully insurance will recover for a lot of it, but memories and everything else are just gone.
Yeah. That's probably one of the hardest things is, you can't replace the piece of furniture that was your grandmother's, right? And you can't replace the photos that were taken before digital and stored away of your family. And all that stuff is just so difficult. And these people got so little notice. This fire moved so fast. I've heard a lot of them say, we just feel really lucky that we got out and that our pet, we got our pets out and us and our family and we're safe. But I've seen the interviews with some of these folks. See, the one that really amazes me is the chief of the Upper Mackenzie Fire Department up there, known as Chief Rainbow, who, while knowing that her house was on fire, continued to help evacuate and protect structures with her volunteer fire crew up there, most of whom also were losing homes, and stayed there on duty for several days. I just can't imagine what it takes to do something like that.
My friend was also a firefighter at one point, and with enough experience to know how fast a fire travels. And when somebody was going down the road with a megaphone saying, get out now, level 3, get out now, she's like, well, it's down the road, it's whatever. But she was totally surprised at the speed of the fire, and they just did exactly like you said. They just threw everything that they could into the vehicle and just booted just in time to see the fire almost on their property.
Yeah. Yeah. And I did post a piece of video from one of our security cameras at our radio tower site there on Mount Hagen as it was being overtaken. And in less than 2 minutes, it goes from seeing some flames down the hill to sparks flying past the camera. And then ultimately, the camera's engulfed in flames as one of the propane tanks for the generator exploded. And the place is completely gone. It goes from less than 2 minutes.
Yeah, and I'd like to give a shout out in the last minute or two to one of the unsung heroes, in my opinion, somebody you and I both know who spent the week sleeping on a couch.
Our good friend and sort of a mentor for the Bo's Nose Show in some ways, Bill London with KPNW, and has been sleeping on the couch in his office for the most part. I think he went home for a while Saturday night, Sunday morning. I've been helping provide Bill with as much information as I can for his newscast and everything, but he has been a great source of good fact-checked information. So as we talk about not needing rumors and all that stuff, KPNW AM Radio 1120, great place on the half hours. He usually does an extended local news segment, preempting even the Rush Limbaugh show at times for short periods, and rejoins in progress, so to speak, just so he can get a few extra minutes of local news about the current emergency out there. So, yeah, unsung hero right there, Bill London with KPNW AM 1120. So,
go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say we're about out of time, but if you got something else, Robin, go ahead, because the magic of internet radio, we can go over.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of heroes out there and people have gone above and beyond. At the donation centers, tons of stuff that came in, tons of people volunteering, like the way Oregon used to be. And it's really great to see that again. And thank you for everybody that reached out and has helped and donated.
Thank you to all the firefighters and the public safety folks, the first responders. They were running in when everybody else was running out. And I just want to say thank you to them. And we'll be back next week with another edition of the Bo's Nose Show. Hopefully it won't have to be all fire and smoke. So next Wednesday, 4 o'clock, coming to you live from beautiful downtown Elmira. Thank you for listening.